Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game with me, Kevin Day, and Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. Kieran and I are still chuckling because we've just recorded the sign-off to yesterday's pod, and we're going straight into the intro for today's interview pod. And we're continuing the chat. It's almost like a live chuckle here. We ended that pod, which is a minute ago, in a good mood, and we're starting this one in a good mood because we know that we've got a really interesting interview coming up. I'll just pause there while we work out what that noise was in the background. It sounded like a Kinder egg being thrown in some anger onto my kitchen floor. But this interview, Kieran, with somebody, it transpires, that you know and teach, is with Tina Rahana, who's a force of nature. She does many things, as you will discover, but she's also brand manager, commercial and PR agent for Mary Earps, England potty mouth goalkeeper. Tina, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Before we get in to football and finance, tell us a little bit about yourself, your background and your ethos, because you pack a lot into your working day, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I do pack a lot into my working day. I have a dance school. That's where I started. So I explain the journey of what we've done. I have a dance school, and I started teaching in a youth centre at 13. I know it sounds a bit crazy, but I wanted to start a dance group, and the youth centre was open, had a dance studio, so I started teaching other kids. My mum thought that I wasn't very much suited to dance, and no matter how much I asked her to take me to dance lessons, she never did. But I eventually did it for myself anyway. And so I started in youth centre at 13, and by 16 I had 23 other girls the same age as me. Now, as you can imagine, that was not that fun because we were all arguing. So I decided that I wanted to teach younger kids at 17. And I Googled competitions abroad, and I found one that qualifies you to represent the UK at World Championships in Las Vegas. So I was like, definitely going to try that. So we went to, it's called UK Hip Hop Championships, and the kids placed second and qualified to represent the country. So we fundraised £6,000 to get there, which took, at that time, I think seven of us over to Las Vegas because the flights were £400. I wish that was still the case. And we went over there, and I absolutely loved it. So I ended up kept teaching in the community, and it grew. The kids ended up doing really well. They became like Northwest champions, UK champions, European champions, world champions. But by 18, I went to university and I entered a competition where it said you can win £1,000. And obviously as a student, you want to win £1,000. So I thought I'd enter that. And I won in the social enterprise category, but I had no idea what it was. And my lecturer said, have you heard of social enterprise? You should change what you're doing in the community, because I entered based on our community project into a social enterprise. At that time, David Cameron had just introduced the Big Society. And so he was essentially defunding the youth centres. So the youth centre that I was in was about to have no funding. So I looked into it, and then I got a full scholarship to my master's in entrepreneurship and wrote my dissertation as a business plan on the dance school, and then set up a dance school called Aim Sky High. So the kids were doing really well, as I explained. Then Justin Bieber uses 13 of them on his UK World Tour, UK Look of His World Tour. Stormzy calls and asks for them. A rapper called Giggs calls and asks for them. CBC commissions a documentary, and we say, OK, there's something here. Let's start an agency. So we start an agency for kids and families. And then we start that in 2009, and we go into lockdown. And so obviously there's no production going on. But my good friend Tom Malone Jr., who was on Gogglebox, only had 25,000 followers across Instagram and TikTok. I kept saying to him, I'm going to help you because it's a travesty that you have that amount of followers and you're on primetime TV. But I had time in lockdown. So we grew him from that to around 1.2 million across both platforms over lockdown. And we did a video on it on Instagram and talked about how we did it and the brands he'd been working with and how to essentially become an influencer. And a lady called Mary Earps slides into my DMs and says, I seen what you've done for Tom, because she loves Gogglebox. And she says, do you think you'd be able to do that for me? So I said, yeah, like, let's give it a go. This is when she had 50,000 followers. The WSL wasn't being aired. And yeah, she was thinking of retiring. So this was more part of her retirement plan. I'm sure, like, if you know Mary, you would have, or you've known her journey, you'll see that she's planning on retiring. And I didn't really know much about the business of football. I grew up in Old Trafford. The 99 parade went past my house. You know, you can't really get away from football in Old Trafford. But my thought process was, well, surely women's football has got to be as big as men's football one day. Manchester United, that's my team. And there's only one goalkeeper on the pitch, so she shouldn't be that hard to differentiate, you know. Well, there's two goalkeepers, but there's only one goalkeeper that usually plays on a regular basis, if you know what I mean. So for, surely that can't be that hard to differentiate. Yeah, we went from there. And lo and behold, this is where we are.
See, I love an interview, Tina, where all the questions I've got already, you've thrown them out of order.
I'm sorry.
No, it's great. Because we'll talk to me about the social media thing then, because I read an article in The Guardian which credited you, because, you know, Mary is called the queen of TikTok by the other England players. And an article in The Guardian credited you with building her social media presence from what it was, this huge millions. Why was it so important then, do you think, for her commercial interests that you had to grow her social media presence?
Okay, so I'll be honest. We weren't thinking at the beginning about... We were to a degree about commercial interests. It was more like, I have influencers, because off the back of Tom, we managed to build an influencer agency. And I wasn't taking Mary on as a commercial agent in football. I was taking Mary on as an influencer. So essentially, I just helped her with what I helped my other influencers with, which is brand strategy and growing her platform. So when we spoke, she said two things to me. I want to leave the women's game in a better place. And she said she wants to make goalkeeping cool. So I said, if you want to leave the women's game in a better place, to me, that starts with young people as well. So you make your difference, but you also need to make sure you're connected with young people, and young people are on TikTok. That's the new platform. That's where you'll be able to access. And it's a lot of young people, and the organic growth is a lot better on there than any other platform. So, like, let's go with TikTok. At the time, there's only 4 Man United players on there. I think Man United women didn't have a presence on there. And that was male and female, and no United player was using TikTok properly. So I said to her, if you can use TikTok, you'll be the first Man United player and first kind of visible women's player on TikTok. And so that we just went with that, gave it a go.
Do you know, I realise now I'm getting old, the fact that there's an agency for influencers now. I'm going to have to check with my agent whether she's got an influencer roster as well. Let's talk about your work with Mary. When Mary saved that penalty, and when she shouted that word to the world down the camera, that naughty word, did you think to yourself, oh dear, I wish she hadn't done that? Or did you think, ka-ching?
You know what? I'm a fan. I'm still a fan. I'm still a football fan. So that actually wasn't running through my head. What was running through my head is, you know, if she misses this penalty, I just don't want her to end up in a not great place as someone who cares about her. That's what I thought first and foremost. When she saved it, I was just another England fan. I was just jumping around, happy, thinking, right, we're back in the game. And it's not until the end of the game where, you know, you watch the ceremony and she's getting awarded the Golden Glove that you actually think, okay, there's something in this. But I think in the moment, I'm just a fan.
It was one of the great sporting moments of the year. I was watching it with my son and we celebrated. It wasn't the penalty save we were celebrating, it was the reaction. Because... because that's what you want as a football fan. That's what you want to see from the people that are playing.
Passion
representing your country, and just lost in the moment. She didn't realise that millions of people were watching it. She just did. But we all in a strange sort of way. And I know this is a horrible phrase, brand attractiveness. Was that in a way more important to sell her as a brand and sports personality of the year? Do you think?
You know what. For me, this journey in the last 8 months has been so quick that I can't necessarily answer that in its full entirety because I haven't had time to reflect on a day-to-day basis. But I would say that I think the thing that probably did it more so was the goalkeeping shirts scenario with Nike, and then that fact that she had a stellar tournament and saved a penalty. I think the BBC sports personality is icing on the cake. And I think for me personally, I have two children, right? I have a 9-year-old and I have a 6-year-old. And I'm learning a lot, okay? So through my children. So BBC Sports Personality of the Year is an amazing achievement. We all know it is. However, if we look at the younger generations, my daughter was on Britain's Got Talent dancing this year, right? And she had no idea who Anton Deck were. So that's when I realised that this generation is so different. You know, BBC Sports Personality of the Year to an older generation means a lot. I think probably 30 and below, no one cares. Like, unless you're an athlete, you know, and it's something you're aiming to achieve, nobody cares really 30 and under. So it depends where your target and key audience lies. The older generation, yeah, I most definitely think that that is a big thing for Mary to win. The younger generation, I think her penalty save going viral on TikTok is a much bigger thing.
Yeah, to be fair to your daughter, when Ant and Deck are apart, no one knows who they are either.
But they were together this time.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I want to come on to the Nike thing later on, but I just want to check. As I understand, Mary Earps has got a business background herself, and she's got a business degree. Is that right?
Yeah.
So does that make your job easier with her, or does it make it slightly more difficult because she understands what you're trying to do, whereas another player might just go, oh, Tina knows exactly what she's doing. I'll do exactly what I'm told.
I would say it makes it easy in some respects, but I wouldn't say it makes it harder. I'd say it makes it... Iron sharpens iron is the best way to put it. So I wouldn't say it's harder. I would say it's challenging in a good way. You know, so I think it makes it easier because when I'm saying, look, I think we should do this, Mag, or look, I think we should do that, or maybe we should look at, you know, this, you know, I can explain the strategy behind it and she can have her opinion on it. But it's easier. I think it's better to work with someone who knows a bit more about where they want to go and what they want, because either the brand stays really authentic to who they are. Whereas if you kind of start to put your thoughts and feelings onto someone, which with some talent, it can end up that way because they just have no idea or maybe no interest in building that side of things for... They might have a commercial interest, but in terms of understanding brand and authenticity, then they don't get it, so they might not be as fussed. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, yeah.
Makes it easier.
Let's talk about that Nike situation then. Because for an outsider, it's very difficult to understand what was going on in their mind.
Yeah.
So what do you think was the original commercial logic behind Nike's decision not to produce replica goalkeeper shirts? And what was it in the end that made them change their mind?
Well, I think I was having this discussion yesterday. The reality of it is they didn't see it as a commercially viable proposition, did they? And I don't think it's personal to just Mary. They don't sell goalkeeper shirts, period, do they? I mean, a lot of the kit sponsors don't. But I think the issue here is that people don't realise that the women's football market is very different to the men's. So whereas in the men's market, people might not want to go and buy a goalkeeper shirt, but in the men's market, you've never had a goalkeeper resonate with people in the same way that Mary has. And if you look at the statistics, women's football, the fans, they follow the player more so than they do the club. So if you have a goalkeeper with an amazing brand or, you know, brand presence or personality, then people will buy their shirt in women's football. It might be a bit different from men's football because generally you don't see many of the male players show as much personality, I think. and feel as you do with the women. And I think if you look at the audience of women's football as well, a majority of the fans are new to football, not just, you know, not just women's football. So you have an opportunity to do something totally different with this new fan base and shape them in a different way. And they don't have the same preconceptions that fans of men's football have.
Mm, okay. I'm going to ask you this question and I'm going to bring Kieran in as well. Because you haven't been working with Mary that long, but I still want to ask you, in that short time, how have commercial opportunities in general for WSL players changed? Have they improved across the board in the time you've been working with Mary, or have they just improved for players of her profile?
Okay, so I think this is twofold here. Because I work with another girl called Siobhan Wilson. She's a championship player. She plays for Birmingham and she plays internationally for Jamaica. And she actually has 1.4 million across socials. So she's one of the probably bigger female players in general. What I've seen is at the beginning, even when we were working with Mary over 3 years ago and trying to get a brand deals, the appetite just was not there as much as it is now, which is totally, like, you know, understandable with the Euros win and whatnot. Like, it's going to increase, right? But what I do think I feel and see is that we think that things are getting better for every woman in women's football. And I think they might be incrementally, slowly getting better for a majority of women. But I think it's only getting a lot better for a small few. And when I look at Siobhan, I'd say this year is the year that people are a bit more open to recognising her as a footballer, because on her socials, she's more of a personal trainer. So we get her brand deals as a personal trainer, but people were never as interested in her as a footballer. Now they are more so. But she has had an ACL, so she had to miss out on the World Cup. And she's also a player. She's a mixed race female. So she's a player of colour in a space where there's not many of them that are playing professionally right now. So she still has a USP to her in terms of her journey in football. So we have managed to get her media, but it's taken media outlets that believe in women's football as a whole, as opposed to one story of the Lionesses, to publish and believe in her.
I'll bring you in here, Kieran, because one of the negatives of our podcast in the 4.5 years we've been doing it is the way we've talked about the geologically slow way that women's prize money is improving, women's wages are improving, women's transfer fees are improving. Do you think it will take as long for Mary Earps to earn the sort of money that Harry Kane earns in image rights? Or do you think that's a battle that's going to be quicker to win?
I think it will still be a slow process, because Harry Kane is able to piggyback on the fact that the Spurs men's team is a global brand, and that if he was still at Spurs this season, 3 days after the final Premier League match, Spurs are playing Newcastle in Melbourne. Now, the winners of the WSL wouldn't be able to go and play the runners-up of the WSL in another market with a sold-out crowd. So from the perspective of people in the world of marketing, that they're looking for that global interest. And I think as far as the women's game is concerned, and Tina's effectively said this, you're going to have some players whose profile will skyrocket, and they will be probably earning substantially more from their off-field revenue streams than they're earning as a player. I don't think many players are in that position. You've got Cristiano Ronaldo and David Beckham, who are brands in their own right, but for the majority of male players, it tends to be the other way around.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
I don't want to mention any brands by name here, Tina, but if you recall, just minutes after the England Euros win, Ian Wright in the studio, and Ian Wright has always been a huge advocate for women's football, he was actually quite cross. He was actually very cross because he said, and he used the phrase crawling out of the woodwork, he said people who have had no interest in women's football will now be launched. Have you found that? Is there a difference in the profile, the size of brands that are now interested in women's football that probably weren't 2 years ago?
100%. I really do believe that. Yeah, 100%. It's the variety of brands and interests we get from different people now is astonishing in comparison to prior to the Euros.
And when you're advising Mary, how do you retain the interest of those brands in a year where there are no tournaments, where perhaps Mary's not winning high-profile games? How do you keep the interest of those brands who, I guess, are always looking for something new and different to sponsor at the same time?
Well, can't give away all my secrets. But what I will say is it's just about reading the market and strategy, right? So it's about, it's not just about looking at only Mary. It's about looking at the market, where the market's going, what topics might be of interest. Obviously still staying within her authentic self and what she enjoys, but it's about making sure that you maneuver and keep her, I guess, I don't want to say keep her relevant, because I don't think she needs to be kept relevant in, to a certain degree, because in my eyes, realistically now, she's a bit of an icon and legend, isn't she? So she'll forever be relevant. It's about how much you want her in the public eye. But what's most important, and especially for Mary, is balancing football with that. So she wants to be the best player she can be. So ultimately, to me, it's a really agile everyday journey that has to be travelled, because you have to balance football and the players' need first before the commercial. So, you know, I could say right now, we need to make sure she's everywhere. And she could say to me, I'm tired, I need to rest because I've got these many games coming up and I want to prioritise winning. And then, you know, everything's off the clock.
I'm glad you used the word icon, because I wasn't reluctant to do so, but I'm happy that you introduced that, because it seems to me that You have a very difficult balancing act, which I think you're doing really well, is because she's an inspiration to tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of young people, especially young girls. We know that. We saw that the petition that young girls themselves started that sent tonight. So you have to tread that fine line between her role as an inspiration and also her role as a brand, if you like, because the two shouldn't cross. Should they? Because she doesn't want to make money. Her message about being your best possible self is fantastic, but you don't want brands piggybacking off the back of that, because it kind of dilutes that brilliant message, doesn't it?
Yeah, I agree with that, and it is about finding that balance. But I also think this is where having someone who does have a background in business and really interested in their own brand and the way that they, you know, I won't say the way that they're perceived, but the way that what they want to be remembered for is really useful, because it's not only me driving that, I'll be honest. It's also Mary. She's a very, very intelligent, articulate woman. So I think it helps in working with someone like Mary.
And she, I think she's from the same street as Peter Shilton, wasn't she? Not just the same town.
So she's
same house, was it? Mm. Oh, well, I didn't know it was the same house. That's brilliant. So it was always on the cards that she was going to be a goalkeeper. But those 10-year-old girls who would have watched that World Cup final, a lot of them in their goalkeeping kits, who want to be the next Mary Earps, in 10 years' time, when they are hopefully in the WSL, How different do you think the commercial world will be for those girls then? Where is the improvement going to come? And are you confident that it will continue to grow? I hate to use the word brand, but are you confident that women's football will grow in the same way that it's growing at the moment?
You know what? I want to be optimistic, but ultimately there's so many different factors involved. It's down to how NewCo now structure the league, right? So it's down to how they structure the league. You know, it's down to how broadcasters and medias get involved in that league. It's down to the commercialization off the back of the league. And that will, I think, determine whether and how these younger girls will have access to commercial opportunities. Because if we move into a similar space as the men's and women's football becomes super, like, to me, men's football is exceptionally oversaturated with players. And you've got a wide choice of players that you can align with. It's very difficult to create your own lane. I think in sport, you either have to be like one of the best or greatest of all time, or one of the best of the time at the moment, or you have to have an amazing, exceptional personality and a brand manager that goes with that. And when you have both, that's when I think you hit the jackpot. So in women's football, I think I'm unsure. I think the commercial opportunities will stay in terms of I only ever see women's football getting bigger. You know, I don't think that will slow down at all. But the opportunities that some of the girls are getting and the manner in which they are getting them, I think there's pros and cons to them, but I don't know if we'll see the younger players have the same amount of input and leverage that a lot of the players at the moment are getting, because they're shaping the landscape of commercial in women's football, and a lot of brands are open to being led by players because they have absolutely no expertise and there's not really much research in this space for them to decide what's right and wrong.
Is it important then, because you've got one client we know in Mary who is a global brand, who is a footballing superstar, but as you mentioned, one of your other clients isn't. So is it important for the other clients, shall we say, that football, women's football, doesn't become what men's football has become, totally dominated by three or four football clubs?
You know what? I've not thought about that, because in all honesty, I don't see it going any other way.
Okay.
You know, the same big six are the same big six in the WSL. And if you look at, according to the Deloitte Money Report, I think I'm correct in saying that Barcelona are the highest grossing in the world, and then Manchester United is second.
Wow.
And it just seems to be the way that it's going to go. I've not actually considered any different, in all honesty. I think it's really difficult when you look at the fact that a lot of the women's clubs are coming from the men's clubs, you know. And I think for the sake of a brand, you can't have a top flight men's club and then a women's club that's going to be sat below a non-league men's club. It's just not, you know, like a women's club attached to a non-league men's club or a League Two men's club. I just can't imagine Manchester City, Manchester United, Chelsea, Arsenal not throwing all resources in to make sure that doesn't happen.
Tina, it's been fantastic talking to you and getting your insight into a world that I think most of our listeners know very little about. But I'd like to end by getting a little bit more insight into your education, because I believe a certain Mr. Kieran Maguire may have had some input into that said education. Is that right?
Yeah. I'm doing my MBA in football industries at the University of Liverpool at the moment, which I'm really enjoying, actually.
Is Kieran a good teacher? Is he a good sir?
Yeah, I don't think I'm wrong in saying that, especially our cohort, he's the favourite.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. He definitely is, yeah.
His passion for teaching comes across in every conversation I have with Kieran. It's great. But let's not, he's starting to get a bit sweaty.
Yeah.
He doesn't like being talked about. Let's talk, just end the team by talking about your future, because, I mean, clearly you have a foot in many camps, and I think you kind of underplayed your choreography role at the start of our discussion, because you've worked with some of the, I mean, you worked with Stormzy. I mean, I live a mile away from from Stormzy, and my son obsessed with Stormzy. So the fact that you worked with Stormzy is just brilliant. So where, I mean, are you coming to a point in you're still very young. Are you coming to a point in your career where you will have to make a decision? Will you be able to diverse? Will you be able to keep the choreography, the dancing, the social community work, and the football work and the entrepreneurship? Because you've got a lot of plates spinning at the moment, haven't you?
I think what I really enjoy is being able to dip in and out of things that I like. So I have a structure with my dance school, and I will keep that forever because that's like my heart. It's like, you know, it's social impact work. You know, I get to walk in. Our agency is on the floor below our dance school. Even when I'm working from the office, I hear the kids come in, you know, I see what they're doing, talk to them, and it genuinely makes me happy. You know, our last report said, I think 11% of the kids access food banks, 10% of them are looked after children, over 50% of them are from single parent households, over 50% of them are on state benefits. So I think also when you're working in this kind of area, such as football, it really is grounding to have children walk in the door every single day, innocent to it all, and they just want to talk to you about what happened at school.
Yeah. My wife is from a dance background. We're both from an arts background. We're both really passionate about what arts and dance can do for young people. So it's brilliant. It's brilliant to talk to someone like you who is making that happen on a daily basis. So it's been a pleasure to talk to you, Tina. Thank you so much. And anytime you want to tell us about Kieran, we can just have a chat ourselves. Kieran doesn't have to be on the interview. So thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you for having me.
Kieran, there's so many things we could unpick in that interview, and I can't remember. I love all the people we interview, but I can't remember taking to someone that we interview quite as quickly as I did with Tina. I would love to meet her, but she had so much to say. But I, as a middle-aged man, what I took out of that was how unimportant Sports Personality of the Year was in terms of the branding, but also how important social media is in terms of branding, but also still that slight unease that Mary Earps will make a lot of money out of women's football, but a lot of other women's footballers possibly won't.
Yes, if the women's professional game is a startup business, and like all startups, you know, there are hiccups, there are spikes in terms of popularity of individual brands, and we don't like using that word, individual products and so on. And Mary, she's been fantastic for England. She's managed to also, I think, to rally around many people with regards to Nike's somewhat tin-eared decision to not shirts available to young fans and so on. And we will have this strange situation whereby the highest paid players in football could be earning more than 50% of their total income from non-playing activities. It is still a sport that is growing. You know, we've seen the crowds at Arsenal. We've just seen Chelsea win in Amsterdam in front of 30,000 in the European Cup and so on. So all of those people that try to compare the WSL to the Premier League, I think, are missing the point. If you take a look at the WSL clubs, they are generating income, which is in line with, you know, League Two, some League One clubs as well. Yes, a substantial amount of the money is also coming from the parent club, but it's a growth sport. So there will be this issue in terms of inconsistency of income. But then, you know, Harry Kane earns a lot more than a League Two left back. You know, and nobody makes an issue about that.
Thank you to everyone who's donated to the pod via our Patreon page. If you'd like to make a small monthly contribution to the pod as well, that'd be very kind of you, and it'd get you access to our chat community and our regular quizzes. You can do that by going to patreon.com/priceoffootball. I'm still worried, Kieran, that when I say that'd be very kind of you, I sound like Boris Johnson. It just really worries me. If you have a question you'd like answered on the show, email us at questions@priceoffootball.com. And you can go to the same website to get yourself our new book or a T-shirt. In the meantime, we'll be back on Monday with our questions pod. Yes, we will. Got confused to what day it was. We'll be back on Monday. Bye, everybody. Bye, BAFTA.
Bye.
The Price of Football.
Picture this, the roar of a crowd, the tension building, the electrifying moment your team scores the winning goal. Pure joy, right? But for many football fans, barriers can shut them out of that experience. In the UK, nearly 1 in 4 people, that's 16 million, have a disability. And over 70% of those disabilities are non-visible.
There's a really broad range of non-visible disabilities out there. So it can be hearing loss, it can be sight loss, it can be neurodiversity, it can be any manner of things that people can't perceive.
People look, why are they parking in a blue badge space? They can walk. Why are they using an accessible toilet? They're walking in. But that's not the point. You can't see the invisibleness of the disability. But then if somebody's judging you, you can tell they haven't got the awareness. They haven't got the understanding.
I've always lived my life as a sighted person who can't see. To the point where then if I didn't have my long cane, chances are a lot of people wouldn't know. Me having it isn't always just for me, but it is actually for other people as well.
Find out how you can contribute to a more inclusive matchday experience for everyone by supporting Level Playing Field, the national charity advocating for greater access and inclusion for all disabled sports fans through its Unite for Access campaign. Unite for your team, unite as a fan. Let's unite for access.